Hey,
What up?
love.
Hello, how are you?
Good, man. I haven't seen you in ages.
I know it's been a couple of months. What's happening?
Just chilling, enjoying quarantine. What about you?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. I haven't stepped out much.
Look at your beard, man.
I'm just too lazy to get rid of it.
Yeah, you're right. Cool. Really excited for
So
today.
yeah, so am I. I want to start off this whole session by congratulating you on the 1 year anniversary of your album Commotion.
Yay.
It's amazing that I was super lucky to get this session with you exactly on the day it turned one.
It's dope. Yeah, I can't believe that 1 year ago I was like releasing my first album. I mean, it's a huge step, you know, to release your first full project. It was the first time I was releasing a project with a record label as well. And it was the first time I was seeing a full project of mine on all like digital platforms and everything. So it was like a great feeling. It opened a lot of doors for me. And we've done so much in 1 year, and the album has traveled all across the globe, and we've been doing shows everywhere, and it's been on radios in different countries, so it's pretty exciting.
Crazy. I was checking your Instagram. I went to your very first post and I kept on checking how your journey has been.
Oh my
And
God.
I think 2019 must have been like the biggest year for you, right?
It was pretty crazy. It was pretty intense. I mean, I had always worked by myself and everything, but I signed with this independent record label called Overstand in end 2018, I think. So 2019 was like, okay, now we have to do everything that we planned for, and everything that I have ever done in my life has led to this moment, kind of a thing. Because this was my first album. I had done mixtapes and stuff like that before, but like, you know, to know what you wanted to say on an album, for me this was like a presentation album where I was really telling the world who I was, how I got there, and what my struggles were. You know, so it was really hard, you know, to get everything down in words and then to be able to express all of that pain and the joy as well, and to make it really danceable and, you know, mix all my influences and stuff. It was a very interesting journey, which was hard, but the result was really good, and I'm really proud of it.
Awesome. Once again, congratulations. I think I really love the album. I think I've told you this before. I think Unstoppable is my favorite track from your album. Though I love all your dance numbers, but Unstoppable like comes out so strong.
That was a very, very difficult song to write. So I knew that I wanted dancey songs, but I also wanted a piano voice song. And I went to see one of my producers, and he was like, "Oh, I'll make you a piano in like 2 seconds." He played one melody, and then he just put it in a loop, and he exported it for like 3 minutes. He was like, "Go write tomorrow. I want you to come back, and we're gonna record this." And I was like, "What?" So I was just at home, like trying to figure out, and I swear I was like crying at the same time I was writing it, because I was like going deep into my emotions. And Unstoppable really tells the story since like I left India when I was a kid, like what my parents went through, how I got to Europe, how I felt really different, you know, from everybody else, how it was really hard to fit in and to adapt to a different culture, different people. You know, when you always feel that you're left out and everything, and how then I had to define myself as a woman, as an immigrant woman in Europe and all of that. So it just reflects all my life, literally.
Yeah, amazing. I think, yeah, I really love that work. And I think it's like you said, I think it's very deep. It's just straight up, it's speaking from the heart. Right. So when was the very first time you listened to hip hop? When was the first time you held the mic?
When I listen to hip hop and held the mic, it's like two different things. Because I used to be a dancer, so I listened to a lot of hip hop because I used to dance on it, and I used to do street shows and, you know, and battles and that kind of stuff. So hip hop was always part of my life. And then I started rapping when I moved to France. So I grew up in Spain, and then I moved to France in 2011. So when I was 18, and over here, like I started, you know, hanging out with different rappers and different musicians, and they were like, "Hey, you can tell that you know a lot of songs by heart and you have a style. Maybe you should try writing." And I was like, "No, I'm a dancer. I don't write." And they were like, "Yeah, maybe one day you should try." So then I just started trying. And at the beginning, what I wrote was absolutely rubbish. But then as we started working on it started getting interesting. And then I was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm not going to do it as a joke. I'm going to work on it really hard. And I wanted to create a style that nobody else is going to be able to imitate and copy. So that's when I started working on my fast style and my varied in my flows and stuff like that.
So you started off as a dancer, right? What made you pick up the mic and never stop. Like, because you're still in the hip hop, in the whole hip hop zone itself. But then you transited from, you were dancing for a really long time, and then you switched to becoming a rapper. And then I see that you're like into it and so much into the craft. How did that happen?
I think what made me stay in the rap game is the fact that I want to be the reference that I never had. Like when I was growing up, there wasn't a brown girl like me that was making hip hop. So I always felt like it wasn't accessible for me. Like we didn't have a place in that scene. So when I started making music, it wasn't like now you have quite a few, rappers, especially in like the Hindi game and the
Right.
DC hip hop scene and stuff like that. But when I started, there wasn't anybody. So I was like, okay, if there isn't somebody, then I'm gonna create that persona. And if there is a space, I'm gonna make that space. I'm gonna create, my own box in which I can fit in and I can define what I want to do. And so that other girls, growing up have a reference to look up to. And I'm gonna, talk about things that we usually don't talk about, like our bodies, sexuality,
Right.
feminism, and all these things. So yeah, I was like, yeah. If that doesn't exist, then it's my responsibility, it's my job to create it.
Right. So you started off with English rap, but then you moved to writing in French, in, I think you also write in Spanish. When did you find the need to so you come from, different cultures, right? You were born in Goa, and then you went to Portugal, and then to Spain, and then to France. So you like when did you find it? So when you started rapping, it was just English. So when did you find the need to switch to different languages and put it all together?
So when I started in English because it just felt like more natural because that's like the kind of hip hop that I used to listen to, like American hip hop. Then I
Right.
decided to put in some Spanish because there were a couple of words, that had a nice phonetical, just the sound of it. I liked the sound of it. So I decided, to start mixing it. And then I was like, but that is part of who I am. Why should I stop myself from writing in Spanish? So then I started writing full verses in Spanish. When at the beginning it was just like a word from time to time. And then when I started
Right.
writing my album, I was like, but I also have a French public. I've also been living in France for nearly 10 years now. That is also part of who
Right.
I am. So now I need to mix
Right.
that inside as well. And I don't write a lot in French because, I did my university here, I did my master's degree. So I have a very academic way of speaking French. I don't have like
Right.
street lingo when I speak French. So when I write rap in French, it's still kind of hard because I just feel that it's not natural. But I really like to write in Spanish because it has a completely different sound to it. Like you can
Right.
say anything in Spanish, it just makes it sound like super dancey and super catchy. No
Yeah,
matter what you say, anything you say in Spanish sounds good. So yeah,
okay.
they have different ways of sounding and different ways you can play around with them differently, kind of thing.
Okay. So, I think your previous stage name was Tracy D, and then you transited to Tracy Desa. How did that transition happen? I think a lot of rappers have this thing where they have one name and then they switch up the name. So, how did that happen?
You have really been doing a lot of research about me. Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that was the whole intention of this series, what I'm doing, that I think people, your listeners or people who listen to me, need to know how this artist has transited from where they started.
100%. Yeah, at the beginning, I called myself Tracy D because I didn't know what to call myself. And then I
Okay.
realized that there was another rapper from the States who was a man who was called Tracy D. So whenever you type my name
Oh
in
shit.
Google, you would get his video. So I was like, okay, I think I need to change my name. And it took me a long while to figure out how I wanted to call myself because I wanted to be authentic. I wanted,
Right.
to reflect myself and my life, but at the same time, I wanted something that was powerful. And I
Right.
also decided to use, because Tracy is my first name, is my real name, and Desa is my last name. It's like 100% real.
Right.
So I decided to choose this because it represented like my cultural background, because Tracy is an English name, Dessa is a
Right.
Portuguese surname, which is very common in
Right.
Goa. And actually my dad had chosen my first name and my dad's family's name is Dessa. And I grew up with
Right.
my mom. I didn't grow up with my dad. So for me, I always felt
Right.
like I didn't carry my name right. Like that name didn't belong to me. Like it wasn't mine. It was somebody else's kind of thing. So then when
Right.
I started working on myself, I was like, okay, now I have to really take control of my name and say that that name doesn't define me. I define the name. So that's when like I
Wow.
made my weakness my biggest strength. Like tomorrow people are going to remember that surname because of me. not because of my
Right.
kind of a thing. So that was like the message I
Nice.
want to put it behind.
Nice. I can totally relate to that because Gubby is my surname, and my previous artist name was Carnage with a K because my first name is Karthik. It starts with K. And since I started rapping in Canada, it felt more natural to me to be more of me and have an identity of my own instead of going with some other name. So I can really relate to that.
But it's really hard to find like an artist name. A lot of people say, try and find something that nobody has, something that reflects you, something that is original. Like, honestly, anything can be an original. Like, if you think of 6ix9ine, what is so original about 6ix9ine? Like, what is so
Right.
original about, yeah. If you think, like, there's a lot of rappers' names that make no sense, but
Right.
it's the sense that you give it and how much you work behind it. Like, how do you make it reflect in your image? Because it's not only about
Right.
finding a good artist name, it's about how do you connect that to a brand? How do you connect that to an image, you know, the image of the persona behind your music, and how do you connect it to the aesthetic of your music and all of that? Like everything is interrelated. So you need to define all those things to be able to know, make sure that your artist name fits in with the rest.
Right, true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
In the
your first
sorry, saying T-Pain
you,
on the
yeah.
covers.
So actually a couple of people have been asking what your mother tongue is. Like, are you able to speak Konkani? Because that's the language spoken in Goa.
No, my mother tongue is actually English, but my second language is Spanish because I got to Spain when I was 2 years and a half. So I learned to
Right.
speak Spanish, and I used to speak Portuguese before, but when I moved to Spain, I forgot all of it. And I don't speak a
Right.
word of Konkani, I don't speak a word of Hindi.
Okay, right. So I think the first mixtape you worked on was the Alpha Female mixtape. I think that's your first big body of work. I couldn't find it anywhere.
I deleted it.
So I was looking for it. It said it, wherever the post was there, it always took me back to your website. I'm like, damn, I have to find out. And there was only one music video, I think, on your YouTube channel about it. And that's also unlisted. So, so tell us about that mixtape. I think that was your first step into making a solid body of work in hip hop.
That was a very difficult project to make because everything was super underground. We were recording it at home. We mastered it with
Right.
some guy that we never knew, and it was like everything was super cheap, you know. So like I wasn't even
Right.
happy with the final quality of it. Like when I listen to it now, when I heard it in 2014, I was like, yo, this is dope. Like I was super happy, super proud. I had my first
Right.
release party and that was
Yeah.
super lit as well. But now when I listen to it, I'm like, I don't want people to listen to Commotion and then find this because it's like
Right.
totally different. And yeah, I mean,
Right.
it does show how I evolved and it shows an upgrade. But at the same time,
Right.
you know, there are some things that you just, they have to stay with you for a moment in time and then you have to move on. You know, either you make them
Right.
disappear, either you keep them, but it's a choice. And I made that choice of removing it because I felt like it didn't reflect who I was as an artist today. And you know, today
Right.
on internet, you can go and find things so easily that somebody could find that mixtape before even finding Commotion. And then they could judge me
Right.
on that instead of judging me on my work from today, you know? So that's why I made that
Right.
choice.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So have you ever done a day job, like a 9 to 5,
Oh,
ever?
yeah.
Yeah.
I quit my jobs maybe last year. I have always
Okay.
been working on the side. So when I was a student, I used to babysit.
Okay.
I've given classes, English classes, Spanish classes. I worked at
Wow.
the airport of Lyon for like 4 years.
Wow.
Then I got a master's in gender studies, so I started working for a business that deals with the public transport in Lyon, and I was working on a project that aimed to improve security for women in public transport. So I was
Oh,
working
that's
on gender
cool.
equality and architecture and all those things.
Okay. So how was it for you to switch from, you know, I think I have a lot of things in common with you because exactly a year ago, I also switched from a day job to
Oh, that's
doing
dope.
music full time. Yeah. So how was it for you to make that switch, to make that leap of faith?
It was pretty hard. Like I for me, the most important is, you know, to have money that comes in. You know, to have food on your plate. Because even when I
Right.
was working, I was spending all my money on my music. Like, you know, to be
Right.
able to travel, to be able to record, you know, to go into a studio to record, to master a song, to buy clothes, you know, to work on my style. to figure out all these courses about social media and everything. So like I needed money, I needed an income. So I was like, okay, how am I gonna do this? And I got to a stage in my job where I was taking a lot of days off. Like I was taking unpaid days off because I had to go to a concert, or I had to go to an event, or I had to go to Paris to record at a studio, or I had to go for meetings. And then I was like, I just feel like I'm not doing neither of those like 100% in, and I need to really focus on one thing. So that's when I was like, okay, my job also needs somebody that is going to be there 100%. So I'm going to give that space to somebody else, because it's also selfish, you know, to want to keep both. So I was like, I'm going to give that space to somebody else, and I'm going to take over my music and start making a real business out of it, so I can, you know, have income that comes in, and then I can start building it as a brand and as an artist and musically and everything. So it was really weird at the beginning, because I was like, I would wake up in the morning like, oh my God, I have to go to work. And I was like, no, this is my work. My work is to stay home and work on my music and meet people and contact people and listen to music and figure out what's the new trend and how do I adapt that and stuff like that. And then I realized how much work it is, you know, to be concentrated 100% on your musical career. It's so much work. Like, when you go to a job, you start at 9 o'clock, you finish at 5. When you're working as an artist, you start the moment you wake up and you finish the moment you go to sleep. It's like 24/7. You have to be answering questions. You need to be getting calls. You need to be checking out what are the latest songs on the billboards. You need to be checking out how people are doing the strategies of social media. You need to be checking out what clothes would match your music video. You need to find out who are the people you want to work with for your music video. And there's like so much research to do all the time, apart from just making music. There's so much to figure out. And it's a process that takes a lot of time.
Yeah, makes sense.
I don't know how
So
you feel.
you
How did you feel it, you know, when you quit your job and you started working in music?
For me, actually, before I quit my job fully, I was working part-time, like 3 days a week. So my company was quite supportive. So I was working with Mercedes-Benz. So they were quite supportive and they let me work just 3 days. But then it got to a point where I didn't know when my day starts or ends, or which I'm doing what, like when. Like, for example, sometimes I had to finish some projects. So I would do it early in the morning, then rush to my work, finish my work, directly head somewhere for a meeting or some recording or whatever, and then go back to sleep really late, and then wake up in the morning, then rush again to work. If I'm not working, then I'm probably somewhere else working on my music, similar to what I think pretty much the same process where I have to be updated about what's going on. I have to see how to build my brand and stuff like that. But I think I was really scared until I took that leap of faith, and then the day after I did, it felt so right. It's been the right feeling. And yeah, like you said, I think for us also another thing is, as musicians, there's no one monitoring us, so we have to monitor ourselves. It's so easy to slip into that whole, comfort zone of not being watched. I think that's another big challenge for musicians.
100%. I don't think people realize how disciplined you have to be, you know, to be a musician. People think that you can find a manager and that manager is going to babysit you and tell you what to do all the time. And no, that manager wants to see you working, and he's not going to work unless he sees you busting your ass off. And that's the image that you have to give your team as well. They have to, you know, be motivated by how much you work and how much effort you're putting into it. You're not going to find a team that's going to work for you. Like, you are the key element of that team. You're the one that's making everybody move forward. So that's why it's like really important, yeah, to know what you want, know where you're going, and be ready to work for it like 100%.
So you've well accepted your persona and your identity, like, because you've come from different cultures, and I think in a couple of interviews also you've told that you can't really define which part of you is coming from which culture. How was it before you did that?
I think I've always been like a mess. And even today, I think I'm a little bit of a mess. Like, I'm a wreck in my head. There's like, I feel like it's hard for me to say that I'm only one person, because I'm a mixture of a lot of things. Not only culture wise, but like, I can be super feminine and I can be a real tomboy as well. I can be super cute and sweet, and I can be like a ghetto girl as well. Like, I have all these different identities inside me, because I know when I have to stand up to myself, and I know when I can like let go and just be nice to somebody. But so in my music, I try to explore all these different identities. And I think that it's even more enriching to explore these different identities, because then it gives you more variety in your songs. And it means that you can transmit different messages and create different atmospheres in your songs, kind of a thing. Like, some people, you know, when they stick to one persona, like one identity, then all the music is more or less the same. But we have to accept that as artists, we don't feel the same thing during the rest of our lives. We evolve, we feel different things. Sometimes we're high, sometimes we're low, sometimes we're super happy, sometimes we're frustrated, sometimes we're sad, sometimes we're angry. And all of these elements have to come out, you know, when we're creating music. And sometimes it's so hard. Like for me, it's really hard to write a sad song because I'm always like, I want to create positive vibes and empowerment and all this shit. And then I'm like, fuck, I just want to write a song about depression. And then my mind is like, no, you can't do that. That is not you. And inside, I'm like, yeah, that is me. That is part of who I am. So, you know, it's really hard to figure out what you want to write for yourself and what you want to write for the public, because it's like two different things. Sometimes what you want to write to yourself is not what the public needs. So then you have to figure out if you want to be 100% authentic to who you are, or you want to be 100% authentic to your brand, kind of a thing.
That's how you have to somehow find that middle ground which works for both. So your education, I think you've done your gender studies, right? You did your master's in gender studies. And how is that influencing your music, and how has that been? Because in India, most of us are like pushed into either becoming engineers or doctor. I'm an engineer, you know. So how has your education process been, and how's that acting contributing to your music?
You know, coming from an Indian family, I was also kind of pushed into those kind of thingies. My mom is a math teacher, so she really, you know, wanted me to do sciences and all this stuff. But I was always good at like letters and arts, and she could see that I used to do fine arts when I was in college, and I used to paint and stuff like that. And she just saw that I was taking a different route, so she just let me be.
So, what is your song creation process? How do you start? Do you start with beat? Do you start writing first? Or how does that go?
I think I have different ways of writing. Like, for example, I always have a note that's open on my phone, and I write words that I find nice, like phonetically, or I like the sense of it. And then sometimes I'll go back to that notepad and I'll be like, oh, here are five words that are from the same theme. Maybe I should write a song around that. Sometimes I just wake up and I'm like, damn, I want to write a song about chocolate, something really random. And then I'll start writing something. I'll just take a beat and I'll start writing something around chocolate. Or, for example, somebody sends me a beat. I'll be like, wow, okay, this beat reminds me of this. Maybe this is the atmosphere that I want to create, and maybe I should start talking about this. So it's like, it's different ways. Sometimes I'm inspired, sometimes I'm not. Sometimes I write two bars and I leave it and go back, and I come back and rewrite the rest of it. Sometimes if I haven't finished the song, I can't leave my house. Like, I have to finish it right now because I'm in that flow, kind of a thing. So it really depends.
Cool. So do you have a recording setup at your place? Do you record stuff by yourself, or
No, I'm so bad with technology. Like, I will not be. My computer's about to die, so
shit.
I cannot use any of, you know, the different apps to make music and stuff. I don't have a mic at home. That's why quarantine has been a little hard, because it's like I haven't been able to create music for 2 months, and I go outside to a studio. So when people ask for like collabs, they're like, okay, it's cool, you're home alone. Home alone, try to create music. And I'm like, yeah, but if you want me to collab with you, I can't send you my voices until lockdown is over. So then it like slows the process down and everything. But at the same time, I'm also a person that believes in making music for a long term, as a long term option. Like, I don't want just to create a verse just like that and for you to release it, and then 2 days after everybody has forgotten it, kind of a thing. If I'm making a track with somebody, I want there to be a strategy or promotion behind it. I want this to have thought about the concept, you know, to be able to put it out and market it and everything. So yeah, it's also a filter for these kind of projects.
I think it's been very interesting for me to be interacting with different artists, because each no two artists have explained the same process to me. I think it's very insightful. I think this one's I think one of my favorite questions. So like I see a lot of artists here in India move to Mumbai, not just rappers, musicians or actors. They move to Mumbai because that's where a lot of scene is happening. And you live in Lyon, right? So have you ever felt the need to move to Paris, or is the scene really big in Paris, or is it big where you stay?
It's a funny question because I'm moving to Paris this summer. So it's really hard to explain. Let's say that I always kind of leveled up my cities. So I used to be in a small village in Spain. Then I moved to a small village in France. Then I moved to a bigger city in France. And now I'm going to move to the capital of France. So I think you need to be looking for where business is, but you also have to be able to move with your brand. If your brand is not ready to go to a big city like Bombay, don't move it over there because there is so much competition that you will be absolutely drowned in the sea of possibilities, and you will not be able to find your brand and yourself and market who you are if you're flooded with influences from other people. So before you move to a big city, you need to already have a public, even if it's a small public. You need to have a little public. You need to have a defined style, a defined aesthetic, and you need to know what your brand is about. Because if not, it's gonna be too hard, and you're never gonna be able to shine. Like you'll only be able to shine when you move to a big city if you come with something different, and if you come with your own personality and your own style and stuff like that. And I think sometimes you need to make space for yourself. Like people always tell me that I should move out of France because I don't rap that much in French, so my real public is not here. People have told me, move to India, your public will grow. It's crazy. Or move to England, your public will grow. And I'm always thinking, okay, maybe people in France are not ready for my kind of music, but if they're not, I'm gonna work on different areas at the same time. I'm gonna travel to India, I'm gonna travel to England, I'm gonna travel to Spain, but I'm still gonna stay here because this is where I feel the best. You know, sometimes you have to make choices for yourself as well. And France has a huge system, you know, that supports artists and invests in artists as well. So I don't see myself going to India, for example. I know for a fact that I will not be able to go to India and develop my career in Europe. But I can be in Europe and develop my career in India. You know, it's kind of, you need to make strategic choices and you need to know where is the place where you can connect with other places the best. Not only, you know, the city that is going to give you the most business, but which is the city that is going to open doors to other countries, kind of a thing.
Wow, okay. Nice. You got shitloads of knowledge, man.
Thank
You
you.
really do your no, you really do your research, and I think you got your shit sorted in your head. Though you say it's full of confusions, but I think you know which direction you're heading.
Yeah, because it's really funny if you think about it. You know, when people tell me, "Yeah, move to Bombay," you like your audience will really grow. And I always say, "How many people from Bombay tour in Europe?" That's the answer. Like, if people tell me move to New York, okay, I can say, "How many people from New York tour in Europe?" If you think about it, there isn't a lot. Only independent artists tour in Europe. These big artists, they only come and do one show in Paris, and that's it. They don't really tour in Europe, kind of a thing. So that's why I always think, you know, you have to really be able to think of it strategically. What is your goal in life? Maybe your goal in life is not to tour. Maybe it's just to make streams. And you can do streams wherever you are, kind of a thing, you know? So you have to figure out what you want and then which is the best place to do it from. It doesn't always have to be a big city.
Okay. Rap a big deal in the house.
Yeah, shout out, big deal.
Shout out to Big Deal. Biggie makes most of my beats. I think more than I think he's been a brother to me, and I think he's like I think he's pretty much similar to you in these kind of aspects. He's always researching, and like anytime we get on a call, he has so much of knowledge to give. Yeah.
Thank
So
you.
tell us about Goa. Like, when was the first time you performed in India? And tell us about Goa. I think you keep visiting India often because your family's here,
Yeah, so my full
right?
family is in Goa. So I left Goa when I was 2 years and a half, and I only came back when I was 11. And then I started going back every 2 years to reconnect with my family and stuff. And then when I started working on my music, I was like, okay, I really want to come back and start, you know, sharing my music, meeting different artists. But if you think about it, there isn't a lot going on in Goa. I remember coming to Goa maybe 4 years ago and there was nothing. So I just like bought a studio and I was like, I'm just gonna go and record at a studio just to, you know, be able to say that I did something in Goa, kind of a thing. But like when I went there, nobody was talking about hip hop in Goa and stuff like that. So I was like, okay, you know, maybe I have to like keep it low and maybe it will come or something. And then, you know, after this whole Gully Boy thing, like everybody wanted to do hip hop and stuff. The first time I performed in India was last year. Last year. Last year in summer.
Delhi.
Delhi was my first show. I came in July 2019. So I was going to do showcases because nobody knew me, right, in India. So I was like, okay, I'm just gonna go and do small showcases in clubs, do 4 or 5 songs just to get my name out there and stuff. And then that's how people started, you know, recognizing me and knowing what my name was. And then they started following me on social media. And that's when in February, like, we decided to come back and create a whole tour. So when I came to
Right.
August, at the same time I was doing my showcases, I was also, contacting bookers and contacting
Okay.
event managers and stuff like that, just so I could figure out who was doing what. And so that people knew who I was, just in case they had a slot, they could always kind of call me. You always have to be people's books. Like, people have to know who you are so that they can know how to
Right.
contact you and they can think of you whenever they have something that, that is kind of meant to be for you. So like, that's what I was trying to do, network, talk about everybody, talk to everybody. And it's really important, to be nice to everybody, because somebody that is just an assistant at a booker's agency might tomorrow be the boss of another agency. And it's really important
True.
to always be good and kind to everybody. Okay, if they're being mean to you, then you have to step up and stand up to them and confront them and ask them what's going on. But it's really always important to never judge people about, according to their position in the business, and always, give
Agreed.
everybody an equal opportunity. So yeah, when I came back in February, I did my tour, and that was like a really, really good experience. It was the first time I was able to, really show the public what I was able to do, do my full 45-minute set on stage,
Right.
with spin, and then, just feel the vibe, feel the energy kicking in, feel everybody jumping and dancing with
Right.
me. That was pretty crazy. I really felt at home when that happened.
Awesome. Okay, I think that was your actual homecoming experience.
For sure, 100%.
So what can we hear from you soon? Like what are your upcoming projects? Do you have an are you working on an album or do you have a single? Do you have some features coming in? Spin Doctor gave us a little snippet of what he's working on when I went live with him.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I am working on a second album, and this album is going to
Okay.
be very, very interesting because I'm going to take a lot more risks. I'm going to experiment a lot more. So there's going to be things that it might sound a little bit weird, and themes that are going to sound a little bit weird, but it's going to be
Okay.
really interesting. I have a couple of singles coming out. So between this summer and this autumn, there were videos and stuff that we wanted to release now during the quarantine season, but we just decided, to lay low for now and just release it when the moment is right. Because right now, things are just being consumed really quickly, and then they disappear. People are not streaming that much. People are not buying. So
Right.
it's not a good
Right.
moment, to put stuff on the market. So we're keeping all that for maybe the summer and the rest of the year. There are going to be more songs in Spanish. There are going to be songs with Indian artists as well. So
Okay.
I'm working maybe on five or six collabs with Indian artists, and some of them are
Nice.
very, very interesting. Some of them are very, very
Okay.
creative. So yeah, hopefully I'll be able to get some Hindi in there too.
Ah, nice. Okay. That's
So
cool. I think they want to hear some bars in Spanish.
okay, ve, me está dando todas las señales, tu mano cerca mía, daños colaterales, quiero hacerte cosas anticonstitucionales, no tengo que preguntarte, tu ojo me dicen cuáles, tú sabes que los otros te miran mal, te llevan la victoria con mi nombre en el brazal, capitán, aquí tienes tu victoria individual, dime qué sabes hacer con ese tatuaje virtual, diferente, tú sabes que es diferente, que quiero que sea ambiente, aquí tú tengo el agua hirviente, contrasiente. Nunca tenemos suficiente, levantamos para tocar mi continente. That's it.
Wow,
Yeah.
you sound so different when you
I
rap
swear my voice is so different.
in. Right. Well, that was dope. That was dope. I think the MG asked, I think a couple of people wanted to hear your Spanish bars. So I think, yeah.
That's
So,
dope.
yeah, most of your songs are groovy. I think it's more dancey and, is that a big influence from your dance background or is just the vibe you are in?
I think that the real influence is the kind of music that I used to listen to when I was a kid. Because I listened to, for example, a lot of Missy Elliott. And Missy Elliott has the perfect combination between, bars, flow, and danceable songs. Like, all her
Right.
songs are like radio hits, if you think about it. So,
Right.
what I was trying to create is, yeah, of course, something that would appeal to dancers, but also something that you could hear on the radio. I'm really looking for that kind of sound, that radio hit kind of music, which also has a
Right.
message behind it. Like, I don't want to just make radio music, for the sake of making it and, say stuff that doesn't make sense. But I also want to make music,
Right.
that makes sense and is danceable and people can enjoy. I think there's a lot of rappers today that are making dark music and, depressive music and stuff. And I don't want to add to that. I really want to be able to
Right.
say, okay, music is a good way of being happy. It's a good way of, sharing emotions and vibing together. And when you listen to music, you forget about all your problems and you disconnect
True.
from everything and you just enjoy. Like, music is entertainment and music is also
Right.
educational. So you can be entertained and educated at the same time. So that's like the kind of vibe I want to get into.
Nice. Okay. So you've got the opportunity to meet Charlie Tuna and Tech Nine and Token. How were those experiences?
Well, you know, they're always kind of disappointing because you never get the chance to actually sit down with these people and talk. So
Okay.
it's weird. I think whenever I'm told that I'm opening up for a big artist, I always
Right.
try to tell myself, okay, now the artist is gonna know what my name is, but that doesn't mean they're
Right.
gonna remember who I am. And that doesn't mean that I'm gonna be able to speak to them because it's really, you can't just go up to an artist that, you know, is selling millions of records and say, "Oh, hi, I'm Tracy. Let's talk about how you came into music." It's like they'd be like, "Yo, I'm not here for that. I'm here just to make it, you know, come go on stage, do my shit, make my money and leave." So there are artists
Right.
with who I can talk to, and others like Tech Nine. He came